नाततमे प्रियतम आत्मजोनिन शंकरा नच संकर्षनोम नासी नेवद्माचायताभवन् नाततमे प्रियतम आत्मज्योनिन शंकरा नच संकर्षनो नासि नेवद्माचायताभवन् Tamaha, most dear. Atma Yonhi, Lord Brahma, who is born from my body. Na, no, Sankaraha, Lord Shiva. Na, no, cha, also, Sankarsham, my direct expansion, Lord Sankarsham. Na, no, she, the goddess of fortune. Na, no, Eva, certainly. Atma, my own self as the deity. Cha, also, yata, as much as. Bhavan, you. My dear Uddhava, neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Sankarsham, the goddess of fortune, nor indeed my own self are as dear to me as you are. Translation responsibly. My dear Uddhava, neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Sankarsham, the goddess of fortune, nor indeed my own self, are as dear to me as you are. Purport. The Lord has described in the previous verses the unalloyed love of His pure devotees for Him. And now the Lord describes His love for His devotees. Atmayoni means Lord Brahma, who is born directly from the Lord's body. Lord Shiva always gives great pleasure to the Lord Krishna by his constant meditation upon him. And Sankarsham, or Balaram, is the Lord's brother in Krishna Leela. The goddess of fortune is the Lord's wife. And the word Atma here indicates the Lord's own self as the deity. None of these personalities, even the Lord's own self, are as dear to him as his pure devotee Uddhava and a Kintina devotee of the Lord. Srila Madhvacharya cites from Vedic literature the example that a gentleman sometimes neglects his own interest and that of his children to give charity to a poor beggar. Similarly, the Lord gives preference to a helpless devotee who depends completely on his mercy. The only way to obtain the Lord's mercy is through his causeless love, and the Lord is most lovingly inclined towards those devotees who are most dependent on him. Just as ordinary mothers and fathers worry more about their helpless children than about those who are self-sufficient. Thus, even if one lacks any material qualification One should simply depend upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead without any other interest, and surely one will achieve the highest perfection of life. I read the verse again. Natatame priyatamha atmajoni na sankaraha nacha sankarsano nasi nevatmacha yatarabhavan. My dear Uddhava, neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Sankarshan, the goddess of fortune, nor indeed my own self are as dear to me as you are. So, this verse, spoken by Lord Krishna to Uddhava, is a continuation of Lord Krishna's response to Uddhava's original question at the beginning of this chapter. So, who can remember Uddhava's original question? What did Uddhava ask at the beginning? He asked why there are different types of systems, especially because the Lord has already explained that devotional service to the Lord is the best process of self-realization. And Uddhava asked, so why are there so many different processes of devotional service? Practices meant to bring about perfection. So, Lord Krishna answered this question by describing that in the beginning he actually spoke Bhagavad Dham, or eternal religious principles, namely pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He spoke that within the Vedic literature to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma in turn instructed that information of the Vedas to his disciples, to his sons, and they instructed it to their disciples, and in this way gradually that Vedic knowledge disseminated down throughout the entire universe. And of course, throughout the entire universe, there are many different types of living beings with all sorts of different material desires and aspirations. And because of their particular goals in life, the Vedic knowledge was spoken differently to those different personalities, and therefore you actually get a whole lot of different versions of Vedic knowledge, because different personalities with different qualifications are accepting that portion of the Vedas which they are attracted to and which will fulfill their particular goals. And by doing that, they cover the original ultimate message of the Vedas. So, because someone has a particular material desire, and the Vedas, which are like a desire tree, help everyone to actually fulfill their desires in the material world, and at the same time make progress on the ultimate goal back to the spiritual world, the Vedas are not leaving anyone out. Everyone is actually included somehow or another on the progressive path to ultimate perfection. But when someone just accepts that part that they're particularly interested in, they inadvertently do not see or cover up the ultimate purpose of the Vedas. So therefore, and within time, that ultimate purpose of the Vedas becomes lost, and you have just the various different types of Vedic knowledge and Vedic processes different rituals, different mantras with different goals, but the ultimate goal has been somehow covered over. So, Lord Krishna, he explained, even to the point where that original knowledge is sometimes explained in terms of atheistic philosophy. So, Lord Krishna, he explained that actually the supreme spiritual practice is pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it is so powerful and gives the ultimate reward in association. It purifies one to the extent that one can actually achieve the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there are many different goals, but there is no goal that can compare to actually achieving the association with the Supreme Lord himself. So that is the ultimate purification, to have no other desire except that, and to be on that platform and achieve the association of the Supreme Lord, because one's heart is so pure, that is the ultimate perfection. And of course, because the Lord can bestow anything upon those he loves, what more is there to be desired? So Krishna explained this to Uddhava. Now, the living entities, of course, they have so many different types of desires other than this desire to achieve the association of the Supreme Lord, and therefore ultimately they achieve so many different types of destinations. They don't achieve the supreme goal. This is described in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 15th chapter, text number 8, where it describes that just as the air or the wind carries aromas, as the wind travels, sometimes it will go over a place which is very fragrant with scent of flowers, and it will carry that fragrance. If the wind goes over a very foul smelling place, then it will carry that foul smell. So in the same way that the Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, that the spirit soul, they develop different conceptions of life, what is the goal, how they would like to enjoy life, and those conceptions, that aroma or flavour, that desire which is the spirit soul carries, that carries them in that way. They quit the particular body, and according to that particular consciousness they take another body like this. So so much so that people, if they desire to live like animals, then they can actually become a dog or a cat or a worm in stall or any different type of animal. And of course that is a very abominable situation for those who are sane. Srila Prabhupada and his disciples, and of course all of us, try to teach people that if they're not careful the type of desires that they're cultivating in this life, they can actually become a dog. Srila Prabhupada was preaching this at the to the students at various universities with his disciples, and the students said, "Well, what's wrong with becoming a dog?" So Srila Prabhupada noted that how fallen and how determined they are, that they considered, if I become a dog, there's huge advantage. They don't consider, they're so addicted to things like sex life, they're thinking, well, if I become a dog, I can have sex life on the street any time, there are no laws, there are no rules, there are no restrictions like that. And the human form of life throughout every civilization, that's not possible. Even you go into the primitive, so-called primitive people somewhere in the forest, you'll still find that is not there. But in the animal species of life, So the students, of course, this is the value of modern education, that they're actually thinking, what's wrong? I become a dog. This would be a great advantage. Right? It's actually better than what I'm enjoying now. So, you know, people carry different conceptions of what is good and bad in the material world, and that conception carries them into the next body. If people want to actually become godly, they may take the form of a demigod in the next birth rather than a god, a dog. Or, of course, Krishna is teaching that the ultimate desire is that if you want to associate with me in the spiritual world, then you become Krishna conscious and you can come back to the spiritual world and associate with myself and all the associates of the spiritual world. So, in this way, this is Krishna's teaching that one should remain purified from all other desire except to associate and serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his associates. Actually, in the 11th canto, the same canto, Dattatreya, he describes that we can actually learn from the wind. So, you know, here's the example Krishna giving, that the air or the wind is carrying, you know, the aromas from one place to another. But Dattatreya is saying, if you look further into this example, you can actually see the nature of the spirit soul. That the intrinsic nature of the air does not actually change, even though it becomes covered by different aromas. In the same way, when a spirit soul, although he enters different material bodies, he doesn't actually become entangled, or the self-realized soul doesn't actually become entangled in that bodily conception of life, because the self-realized person doesn't identify with the material body, but they always remember that they are the spirit soul who is just transmigrating from one body to another. So therefore, the self-realized person sees that their spiritual identity and the intrinsic eternal qualities of the soul, they don't think that because I'm in the body of a a very skinny person, that now I am very skinny. They think, no, the soul is not skinny, is not obese, is not big, is not small. The soul has not become weak. You know, that they understand that when the soul goes into the body of a little ant, the soul has not become weak. When the soul goes into the body of an elephant, the soul has not changed its nature and become extra strong. The soul it keeps its own intrinsic characteristic. It's just covered by apparent differences like this. So, therefore, the trick is to always avoid association or identification with the material body. As soon as one identifies with the material body, one becomes contaminated, and then lust, greed, anger, envy, you know, all these qualities will immediately enter as soon as we identify with the body. But if we identify ourselves as the pure spirit soul within the body, then we keep our pure spiritual identity. So, Krishna is teaching, you keep that pure desire of the soul to always serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You keep that pure desire, whatever, you know, body you happen to be in, you keep that desire. In this way, even though one is within the material body, actually their original spiritual nature and their spiritual situation doesn't actually change. Only if we identify with the material body do we lose that spiritual consciousness, that purity. So, therefore, actually, Dattatreya, he also explained Now, as you see here, you're probably wondering where I'm going with all of this. We started off in this verse. Krishna is telling how much that he loves his Akinchana devotees. Those devotees who have no other desire for anything else. Akinchana means that which is enjoyable in the material world. And Akinchana means they have no desire for any of that. They only desire Krishna. So that is the Akinchana. So Krishna is saying in this verse, he's been telling us how glorious are the Akinchana devotees, that they become so pure and because of their love for the Supreme Lord that they attain his association. And now he's telling how much he is, loves his Akinchana devotees. So therefore, I'm actually just going through different instructions given by the Lord in his various incarnations, which show the nature of the Akinchana devotee, how they always remain completely pure of any other desire. So Dattatreya considers that they're like water. Water, you know, by its very nature is always pure. Water, so the Akinchana devotee also, they can be compared to water because they're very pure. They're also, water is considered to be, it purifies others. And it's also considered very sweet in its original pure form. So we see that the nature of devotees is that they can purify others, and by their very sweet kirtan and discussions about the transcendental glories of the Lord, they make these very sweet melodious sounds, just like I was chanting my Gayatri by the fountain out there this morning. Brajanari thought I was praying to the fish for their mercy, but I was actually, I was meditating, I was chanting my Gayatri and simultaneously meditating on the sound, you know, of the water, because listening to the melodious sound, you know, you hear the fountain. One of the beauties of the fountain is, of course, you have that very wonderful, you know, sound, and, you know, a trickling brook. So, you know, that is the nature of devotees. And, of course, we have the great fortune that in the next couple of days, next couple of days, today and tomorrow, we're going to hear, you know, so much of that very sweet, melodious sounds, kirtan and katha from Krishna's devotees. In that way, they are compared to water, and they're very pure, and they purify others. So, the Akinchana devotee is also compared to fire. That one should not approach fire very carelessly, because they're very powerful. So, as Krishna describes his pure devotees, they actually achieve the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is personally with those devotees, so one should be very careful how one treats the devotees of the Lord. So, of course, you know, we have that opportunity again, so many nice devotees coming to our temple, and we should extend hospitality to such an extent that they will not have seen such hospitality anywhere else they may have gone. And, you know, we can try and appreciate that here are these, you know, Sankirtan devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and like fire, we should approach them very carefully, not carelessly, but at the same time, like fire. Fire is very purifying, and Srila Prabhupada gives the example that, you know, if you put an iron rod into fire, then that iron rod acts like fire as well. So by the association of these devotees who are very, very attached to the holy name of the Lord, we can also develop that spiritual quality by that association. So You know, these are the different qualities here, the different characteristics of Krishna's akinchana devotees. So here in this verse, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur actually commenting on the previous verse describing the glories of the akinchana devotees, he says that the verse in the Bhagavad Gita 4.11, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. He says that reveals Krishna's mind and Krishna's intention that he is always absorbed in thoughts of his pure devotees. If he says, as they surrender unto me, as they're thinking of me, as they're absorbed in me, I reward them accordingly, that means that he's always thinking of them. Otherwise, how can he reciprocate? If he turns his head for a moment and they do something, how can he reciprocate? That means that his attention is especially upon those devotees who surrender to the Lord. So therefore we should understand that those who have that desire to surrender to Krishna and have no other interest except for Krishna, they're directly in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're directly associating with the Supreme Lord because the Supreme Lord is directly associating with them. So one may ask, so it is obvious that the devotees of the Lord who have no other desire except to be Krishna conscious, they are very dear, but how dear? So the Lord explains this in this verse. He says that neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Sankarshan, or the goddess of fortune, nor indeed my own very self, are as dear to me as you are. Now, Sanatana Goswami, he explains here that Krishna was, he's been describing the glories of his akinchana devotees. And he becomes so much in ecstasy thinking about all his wonderful devotees, how they had surrendered to him, completely dependent upon him, their wonderful qualities, their wonderful love for him, that he actually meant to say, no one is as dear as my devotee. But he said, as you are, whatever. In that sense, Sanatana Goswami is explaining that, Uddhava, is certainly one of the best representations of Krishna's akinchana devotees who are completely devoted to the Lord. Which means that we should apply this verse to different degrees to all of Krishna's akinchana devotees. So, which we can discuss in a moment, but just first we can even try and understand this statement in itself. It seems, if we take the position of Lord Brahma, Lord Brahma is described here as like a son. Well, he is the son of the Lord, is born from the Lord. Lord Shiva is very dear to the Lord. He is an associate and a friend, always meditating upon the Lord. Sankarshan is an expansion of the Lord, and even takes the expansion in the form of Balaram in Krishna Leela. Like a brother, he is a brother. And the goddess of fortune is the Lord's own wife. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he explains, which is described here in this verse, that sometimes you actually see that a gentleman with very elevated qualities, that when they may somehow come across a beggar who is depending upon their assistance, that they will actually assist that beggar, even if it goes against their own self-interest and even the self-interest of their family and friends. Sometimes you see that quite often, even in Victoria over the last couple of years, there's been incidences where some people have been, being viciously attacked on the street, crying out for help, and someone passing by, even though they know that if I just walk away, because I have my wife depending on me at home, I have my children, or my husband sometimes, depending on me at home. So many friends, they also deserve the best of my love, but I'm going to risk all that to help this person. And sometimes that person is actually killed. In the last few years there's been several incidences of that sort of thing. So it's like that it is a natural inclination that we have, because it's there in the Lord, that when he sees his devotees just so completely dependent upon him, not depending on anything else, no interest in anything else, his natural inclination is actually toward that devotee. So the Lord's nature is that he actually gives preference to those who are most dependent upon his mercy. As described here in this purport, that the only way you can get the mercy of the Lord is through the Lord's own causeless love. There is no other way. But that causeless love of the Lord is inclined towards his most dependent devotees. So, in the same way, again, another example given in the purport, that sometimes we see that the mother and the father, if they have different children, if one of them is particularly helpless, they think about that child more than others. I had that experience myself, as my mother actually nursed my brother for about 20 years. He had schizophrenia and he had cancer. And he had, just incapable of doing anything in life. He couldn't work. He couldn't have a family. He couldn't look after himself. So I always noticed that, when I was around, it was, oh, Vic this, Vic this. I didn't care, because I love my brother as well. But it's a natural inclination that when, a child is so dependent, they naturally give the most attention to that child. And someone who's a bit self-sufficient, I was always a bit just independent, just looked after myself, didn't really want much anyways, there's not much to look after, but it's almost like you can be invisible, you don't exist. So sometimes Lord Brahma and other demigods, although they're also the Lord's devotees, but they're in that category. They're well looked after. Well, Brahma's got his big position. He's looking after the unit. He's got facility laid out. Indra's. But the Akinchana devotees, they're like that. They're just helpless, crying. I have nothing. I don't want anything. I have nothing. I just want Krishna. So, this is the natural inclination of the Supreme Lord. And they just want to serve Krishna. And by that service, just always helplessly crying out, I have no other, aspiration. I just want to serve you. And I have no qualification to serve you, my dear Lord. So, but by that service attitude that they have, they bring the Lord completely under their control. Krishna actually describes that in the ninth canto. He says to Devasa Muni that, my devotees, I become completely under their control. I have no independence. We hear in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto, the Supreme Lord is described as independent, but he's not. because he voluntarily gives that up and surrenders his independence to become controlled by his pure devotees. In the same way, we see that, you know, a chaste wife, she knows the skill to bring the husband completely under her control. In the those who, you know, are very foolish, we see that they try to control the husband by competing. It never works. It always ends up in disaster. But actually, the intelligent woman, she knows that she offers nice service and the husband becomes like putty in her hand. She has full control over. We see this, even in the case of the Supreme Personality of God. It is actually natural. So, therefore, you know, sometimes people criticize that somehow, you know, the women somehow, you know, slaves to the men. But the fact is that an intelligent woman actually controls her husband. He becomes the slave. That's the actual fact. That's the Vedic system. So, of course, the husband, in one sense, you know, he agrees to be submissive and under the control of the wife. So there's a very nice, sweet, loving relationship there. Very nice. It's not artificial. Here, we may wrongly consider that this statement of Krishna is saying that Uddhava is the best of all devotees. So that needs a little bit of clarification. In the various Vedic literatures, there are many statements about the Lord's different devotees. And Rupa Goswami has summarized those statements in order to show the superiority of various devotees according to the degree of their bhakti. And so he describes that there are many, many wonderful, very important devotees, but of them, Prahlad is the best. Prahlad is the best because, as described even by Prahlad himself, that again, Shiva, Brahma, Lakshmi, the Lord, he did not fondly touch them on the head, but actually he did that with Prahlad. He actually showed him more affection than he actually did to others like that. So Yudhisthira Maharaj, of course, he was hearing the story of Prahlad from Narada Muni, and he was thinking, oh, you know, I am so unfortunate. Prahlad is so fortunate, I have no fortune. And Narada Muni said, no, you are more fortunate than Prahlad, because the Supreme Lord reciprocated with your devotion, which is of a superior nature, by granting you favours that were never shown to Prahlad. And therefore he described that the Lord, he came in, lived in your house and became your cousin. So therefore, you know, he never became the relative of Prahlad. That intimacy that one has access to when God is your cousin, you know, it was shown to Prahlad. And because the Lord often visited the Pandavas, then different sages like Markandeya Rishi and so many wonderful sages from all over the world would come and visit, you know, Krishna and the Pandavas. And Krishna also showed particular favours, you know, to the Pandavas. You saw that he became the chariot driver of Arjuna. So he showed them many, many personal favours that were never shown to Prahlad. But it is described in the scriptures that the Yadavas, the Yadavas, their situation of bhakti is even superior to that of the Pandavas. Especially we're talking about the Yadavas who are eternal associates of the Lord, because the Lord was a blood relative and a relative through marriage, and they had constant association. You know, their greed for the association of the Lord was even, you know, to the extent where the Lord, you know, become submissive to that desire, and he, you know, lived with them. So they would, you know, sit with him, and they would eat with him, and, you know, they'd lay on the bed with him and chat and picnic and so many things. Even, you know, intimacy that was not even there with the Pandavas like that. So then the scriptures describe that amongst the Yadavas, Uddhava is superior. Because his love and desire for the association of Krishna was particularly intense, even amongst all the millions of Yadavas. So much so, it's described in the Bhagavatam that, you know, when he was 5 years old, and his mother would call him, you know, time for breakfast, come and eat, that he wouldn't come because he was just absorbed in thinking of Krishna as a little child. So even from such a young age, you can imagine as he grew, he just, you know, became more and more completely absorbed. And Krishna also says, you know, in the Bhagavatam, even here in this canto, that Uddhava is equal to me in all respects. So now the scriptures describe that even more superior to the bhakti of Uddhava is that of the gopis, because even Uddhava, he was so enamored by the intensity and the superiority of their devotion and love for Krishna that he desired that if I could just become you know, a little blade of grass in Vrindavan, and somehow or another their lotus feet would walk past and some of the dust from their lotus feet would come on my head, if grass has heads, then, you know, that would be the supreme benediction. So and then of course the gopis, they're also described as even, you know, more superior also than the Lakshmis of Vaikuntha. But amongst all the gopis, all the scriptures continuously proclaim that Srimati Radharani is the most exalted. She is the topmost devotee. Above Radharani, there's no higher devotee. She is the topmost devotee. So, you know, this verse applies to all of Krishna's pure devotees who have no desire for anything except Krishna, and on different levels, you know, we see that Krishna becomes, that they become more and more dear to Krishna according to the intensity of their desire for Krishna, like that. So, now, therefore, Krishna says that my devotees, these devotees are so dear to me. I've got about 2 minutes to go. These devotees are so dear to me. But he says this in the ninth canto, that even the devotees of those devotees, they're also very dear to me. So of course, again, as described by all the acharyas, if one has no devotion for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he cannot understand Radha Krishna. That person will not have, you know, a strong desire to worship Radha Krishna, you know, and understand that Srimati Radharani is the emblem of, you know, devotional service in its, you know, highest form. They cannot. Without Lord Chaitanya's mercy, they cannot. Only the devotees who benedicted by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, only they can, you know, understand the glories of Krishna's most exalted devotees. So therefore, if one becomes a devotee of Lord Chaitanya's devotees, one becomes very, very dear to such personalities as Srimati Radharani, the Gopis of Vrindavan, Uddhava, all the others like this. That is the only process. If one neglects Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan devotees, it is not possible to actually take shelter of these very, very exalted devotees. One will not develop that desire. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada explains that the very purpose of ISKCON is to give us the opportunity to serve the mission of these pure devotees who are, of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who are very, very, very dear to Krishna. So this is the opportunity we have in ISKCON. That these topmost devotees, who are the most dear to Krishna, we can take shelter of them. So we take shelter of Rupa Goswami, and he is a devotee of Krishna's dearest devotees, so we also become dear. So, this mercy has come down through the line of Srila Prabhupada, and of course to the current spiritual masters, and to, the Sankirtan devotees in general. So that is the very purpose of ISKCON, is that we actually have the opportunity to serve their mission. Srila Prabhupada said that, I shall read it, there's a beautiful, wonderful quote here which sort of sums up the ultimate point that I'm coming to. Here's a nice quote from Srila Prabhupada, from the purport to the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 28, text 51. In conclusion, if a disciple is very serious to execute the mission of the spiritual master, he immediately associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by Vani or Vapu. This is the only secret of success in seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Instead of being eager to see the Lord in some bush of Vrindavan, it is funny, while at the same time engaging in sense gratification, if one instead sticks to the principle of following the words of the spiritual master, he will see the Supreme Lord without difficulty. And of course, as Prabhupada often said, don't try to see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will see you. So that is the wonderful opportunity we have in this society, that we can serve the mission of the Acharyas by spreading the holy name and spreading the pure teachings of the holy name and giving everyone an opportunity to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, take prasadam. And we have that opportunity to associate with all the wonderful Sankirtan devotees who are always, in the association of the Supreme Lord. So that is a wonderful opportunity. So that's all I've got to say. If anyone has any questions or comments, Bhagavatam Reader expands upon those points. It's summarized by Rupa Goswami in the Lagu Bhagavatam Reader, expanded by Sanat Goswami. Yeah. What's that?
The superiority of the Yadu dynasty over the Pandavas. But in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when it was being discussed about the Yadu dynasty annihilating themselves as a pastime of the world, to wind up Dwarka. So over there, Srila Prabhupada writes somewhere that the Yadus realized the Paramatma feature of the world.
Yeah, Because the statements of the Bhagavatamrita, and therefore the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, is specifically referring to the eternal associates of the Lord. Because many of the Yadu dynasty were various demigods who actually had the opportunity to associate with the Lord to varying degrees. But particularly, you know, the statement is referring to the eternal associates of the Lord. So there are some divisions even amongst the Yadus. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.